To order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Christensen.
Here.
Council President Boobin Van der Haar.
Present.
Councilmember McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And we have Pastor Scott Allen from United Methodist Church here to give the invocation, and then directly after that we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you'll all stand, please.
Our gracious and loving God, as we gather together to seek what is best for our community, we ask that you direct us in our visions and guide us in all we endeavor to accomplish. May the results we seek benefit all persons and provide a firm foundation from which to contemplate possibilities we have not yet considered. May our work strengthen the bonds of friendship that exist among us and demonstrate the respect and integrity that forms the basis of all civic commitment, service, and cooperation. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The first item we have is the consent agenda. Questions, comments, motion?
If nobody has anything, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you take poll the council, please?
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Van der Haar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Thank you. And that will bring us right into public hearings. Item 7A, public hearing and consideration to approve 18-05-S, preliminary plat. The applicant, Anaki Let, requests to subdivide approximately 12.19 acres into 19 total lots consisting of 10 commercial buildable lots and 9 common lots, and has reserved the name Leet Commercial Subdivision. The subject site is located at 1795 West Deer Flat Road, Cuna, Idaho, 83634, within Section 22, Township 2, North Range 1, West, APN number S1322111056. Is Anaki here to... Hi there.
Anaki is not here. I'm Will Mason with Mason and Associates.
Okay.
Anaki Lette is our client. I really don't have a lot more to add than what was described. This is on the corner of Deer Flat and 10 Mile. And we have gone through the Planning and Zoning Commission's hearing and received their recommendation for this preliminary plat. We have read through the requirements for the agencies and have no concerns with meeting those requirements of the various agencies.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for? Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and open the public hearing. Is there anyone who wanted to testify in this matter and didn't get a chance to sign in? Thank you. And Jace, you may be up.
All right. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Jace Hellman, Planner 2, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho. The application for you this evening is for consideration of approval or denial of the proposed preliminary plat As stated previously, they're proposing to subdivide approximately 12 acres into 19 total lots, 10 of them being commercial buildable, and 9 common lots. Our staff would note, this preliminary plat comes to the council as a step towards completing a condition of approval that was issued with the granting of a special use permit by the Planning and Zoning Commission back in February 2018. Basically, they got approval for an addition to a storage facility, and as that condition of approval required to do a special use for 4 or 5 acres of that piece, or of the overall piece, and then they were conditioned to come back with a preliminary plat as that special use area included as a lot. Shared access on the 10 miles proposed between lots 18 and 16, 14, and 13, and the remaining lots are to be accessed via existing access on Deer Flat Road. But following correspondence with Ada County Highway District, their access to proposed buildable lots is only granted via the existing access points on 10 Mile and Deer Flat. And then staff did follow up with ACHD, and then an additional right-in, right-out entry point along 10 Mile, no further than 550 feet from Deer Flat and 10 Mile Road, will be permitted. So staff would just recommend that the applicant be conditioned, staff will require the applicant to work with ACHD in the city in order to provide access to a site that meets Kuna City Code and ACHD policies. Additionally, staff has required the applicant to allow cross-access across all newly created parcels so when they are developed in the future, people can access the lots. The applicant proposes to install 8-foot sidewalk. Following staff's review of the preliminary plat, it appears that the proposed location is within the designated landscape buffer for the site. The road sections of 10 Mile and Deer Flat Road that abut the site are designated as minor arterials. Kuna City Code 5-17 requires the construction of detached 8-foot sidewalks along company property frontage. And then the sidewalks need to be located within the public right-of-way and separated from public vertical curb by a 4 to 8-foot irrigated planter strip. Staff's required, within the staff report you'll find that we required the applicant to conform to City Code or Kuna City Code and install the proposed sidewalk as it's stated within code. Staff's determined that the preliminary plat complies with the goals and policies for the City of Kuna, Title 5 and 6 specifically, and the Local Land Use Planning Act of Idaho Code, and the Kuna Comprehensive Plan, and I'd forward a recommendation of approval for 18-05S preliminary plat, subject to any conditions that are within the staff report, and then any additional conditions that you seem fit. And I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Okay. Questions for Jay?
No.
That will be nice to have sidewalks in that area. That's been a problem spot for many years. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Chase. So we... ready for deliberation? Did you want to talk to any more of the staff or the applicant representative?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
Good. So do we need to do we have to move to close the hearing then, or?
Yeah, if we're ready to.
Okay. Sorry. So is that I move we. Do I have to actually move we close the public hearing, or is it just I move we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation? Okay. I move we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion's made to close evidence and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries.
As Jace noted, the staff is recommending an approval. I agree that it appears to comply with a comprehensive plan and hits on some of our goals regarding economic development and land use. It also appears to be in compliance with Kuna City Code. And therefore, sorry, I'm clicking all around. So I move we approve 1805S and direct staff to prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order of decision for approval by council on the next council meeting's consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve 18-05-S and direct staff to provide a finding of facts and conclusions of law on the next meeting's consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion carries. 7B, continuation of public hearing to receive evidence, including but not limited to evidence regarding health and safety issues, sewer capacity, traffic safety issues, and build out of the proposed subdivision, and consideration to approve case number 18-02-S, Madrone Heights subdivision. K&M Engineering, on behalf of the applicant, Tim Ack, requests approval to subdivide approximately 39.5 acres into 206 single home lots and an additional 27 common lots and one shared driveway. The address is 2030 West Cuna Road, Cuna, Idaho, and is located near the northwest corner of 10 Mile and Cuna Roads in section 22. T2N R1W APN number S13224384 00. So this is a continuation of a public hearing to hear some more of those items, and we do have some people signed up for testimony. So we'll begin with Christy Garbo, K&M Engineering. You don't look like a Christy.
That's correct, Mayor. My name is Jeff Bauer, here on behalf of the applicant. My address is 601 West Bannock. Mr. Eck is here tonight and available for questions, but he is planning to use our rebuttal time, so you can ask him questions then as well. We are here tonight on a preliminary plat application only. P&Z and staff have both recommended approval. At this point, I probably don't need to tell the council too much about this project. It's our third time before you. At the December 3rd hearing, our most recent hearing, you reopened the public hearing for us to submit additional testimony on three specific items. The first was build-out timeline. The second was health and safety issues concerning sewer connection. And the third was transportation safety issues. We did submit written comment that's in your packet tonight last week. I think we've addressed all of the council's concerns there in writing. Plan to go over that briefly tonight and try to address some of the written comments from the community that we've received in the interim as well. So first, I'll just do a quick overview of the project. 39-acre property. Preliminary plat seeks to subdivide that 39 acres into 206 buildable lots. The property is designated as medium density residential on the comp plan, so we're in R4 to R8. Our plat that we're submitting is at 5.2, and that was based on a previous density cap that was imposed. Important, again, addressing some of the public comments that have come in. We do have three parks in the plat, 3.4 total acres of open space, and one central large community park with two soccer fields. The Madrone Heights subdivision will have two primary accesses that we'll construct initially. One of those is off Cuna Road. The second is off of a mid-mile collector that the applicant will be constructing. All right, now turning to some of the council's concerns and requests. First, build out. As the council knows, single family residential is in high demand in the city, so we're basically gonna try to hit the ground running as soon as we get all the approvals we need. We're hoping to try to final plat phase one in 2019 and bring on an additional phase each year thereafter. That's, of course, subject to market conditions, but if things stay the same, that's our plan. Each of the phases are approximately the same. I think the smallest is 41 lots and the biggest is 60, so they're all about a quarter of the development. Next, turning to sewer and the health concerns there. This has been a topic of conversation on this property since this time last year when we sought annexation. So at that time, the original application to annex and zone this property was for an R8 designation. Mr. Bachman at the time raised concerns about that level of density. You know, we were only bringing it in at that dense to allow for flexibility in design, essentially. So at that hearing, I think in February of 2018, the council's recommendation, we agreed to R6 zoning with a 5.2 cap. So that's what we have now. The property is zoned R6, so we have certain entitled uses there, including single-family residential at 5.2 units per acre. When we were annexed and zoned, the findings at the time did make certain conclusions that I think are relevant now. One, that the property was suitable for this development, and two, that specifically there were no health concerns because we were able to connect to sewer at that density. So I think those are important. Again, we meet that density today with the preliminary plat before you. At the prior hearings on this application, November, December of 2018, Mr. Bachman has provided very helpful testimony to the council, I think. You know, one of the points being, since early 2018, city staff, Public Works, have been making improvements, modifications to the system to improve capacity south of Indian Creek. That benefits us and the city, of course. And second, most importantly, you know, he's specifically said he can issue a will serve order for our project at this time. Another thing to consider, we are a multi-phase project. So, you know, we aren't going to bring all 206 units on at once. The city and the system can make modifications and improvements as we go to full build out. Lastly, just in terms of helping to build the system out, we will be contributing sewer connection fees. That's very large, $4,326 per residential unit. We also have, Mr. Eck has purchased prepaid EDUs that we may use. All right, turning to traffic. Kilsen did prepare a traffic impact study in connection with this. The bottom line conclusion was, at full build-out with proper mitigation, safety and levels of service will be maintained. At this time, neither Transportation Agency, ACHD, nor ITD have any safety concerns with the project. ACHD's report specifically finds we're currently meeting the level of service in the study area, and at full build-out we'll also meet their acceptable levels of service in the study area. We do think, you know, we're providing really good transportation improvements to mitigate our impacts. I know you've read it, but I'll just briefly go over them. Some of the major ones, at least. A right turn lane at westbound Kuna Road as it meets Black Cat. We're also doing significant road widening adjacent to our property. So currently, the westbound lane on Kuna Road is about 10 feet wide. We're going to widen that to 17 feet. There will be a shoulder as well as a detached 5-foot sidewalk that the applicant will be constructing. Some other important safety concerns, mitigation, traffic improvements. We'll be constructing a right-hand turn lane at that main intersection of Kuna and the future Madrone. So that'll be one of the main entrances. That'll provide queuing length and time for traffic to slow. There'll also be a left-hand turn lane, center turn lane, that we'll be constructing on Kuna Road to provide left-hand turning. Lastly, one of the most major transportation improvements we're doing is that collector road on the west side of the property. So basically, at the furthest western boundary, major collector road, that is on ACHD's master street plan, and it does provide future connectivity to all of the parcels around us for future access development, and it does provide a secondary access to our development. Overall, we think, you know, the project's going to have very limited impacts on the surrounding roads. Concerns have been raised about this particularly eastbound traffic headed into the city and then onto State Highway 69 and so forth. In our written submission, I included an impact map that I think is really helpful. But basically what it concludes is of all traffic on all those roads, you know, we'll only contribute approximately 5% of the eastbound traffic on Keener Road. And that really decreases as you head in towards the city to the point where as you're on Avalon, on the north side of Indian Creek, we're less than 1% of the traffic headed out to State Highway 69. Another really important fact, I think, in terms of traffic volume, the TIS concluded that we're only going to account for about 112 trips at the AM peak hour out onto Keener Road. So not a significant traffic impact at the AM peak hour. And lastly, we will be paying impact fees to ACHD to mitigate any downstream impacts. Associated with traffic safety, real quick, on sidewalks, we will be constructing all sidewalks on our property required by the city code and ACHD. You know, we've submitted in writing why we don't think we need to make larger improvements downstream. Those are, you know, significant improvements that ACHD's impact fees are designed to make globally, and we don't think we'd have the ability to make them at this time just because of, you know, right-of-way issues, acquisition issues, that sort of thing. Lastly, a couple things to address specific public comments. We've heard comments about schools and EMS. As to schools, of course, new development brings more students. I think that's a good thing. But most importantly, the comp plan predicted that this piece of property would have this density and bring that amount of schools. Furthermore, you know, the new houses brings more taxation, more dollars for schools, and the schools have resources to address growth through redistricting, bond measures, that sort of thing. Lastly, EMS. Response times have been the key issue. According to the fire district's website, response times in the city are somewhere between 4 to 6 minutes. We're only about 1.5 miles, and one more minute.
Okay.
About 1.5 miles from that district house, we'll meet the response times, even with the train crossing. Approximately, and Tim will address this more, the average wait times are about 2.5 minutes. So even with that average wait, we're still beneath the six-minute response time. So with that, I'll rest. I think we meet all the criteria for the preliminary plat, and I'll stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions? Mr. Brown.
So those sidewalks you're talking about, I do want to say thank you for addressing these, but those sidewalks you talk about are out on Keener Road in front of the property. Is that what you're referencing, or are you referencing sidewalks just within the development itself?
Mayor Steer, Councilman Christensen, so we will be doing all internal sidewalks as well as a separated 5-foot sidewalk along our frontage on Keener Road as well as on our frontage on the Collector Street. So significant exterior sidewalks as well as internal sidewalks.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions?
No.
All right, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. All right, so we have signed up to testify. We'll start with the in favor, Tim Gordon.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. And my name is Tim Gordon. Address is 1206 North Black Cat Road, Keene, Idaho. And I submitted the same letter to in your packets. I'll try to speed read and get the 3 minutes done. Dear Mayor and City Council, I'd like to take the opportunity to share my thoughts and historic evidence regarding the above application being Madrone Heights. I have lived in Keene for the past 32 years, and I have seen Keene grow from a sleepy little town of 1,800 people to the current population of 1907, according to Compass 2017, And as with all small communities, growth poses challenges and opportunities. I have lived on both sides of the Union Pacific Railroad tracks, and I currently reside and have our family business on the south side of the tracks. I personally have been involved in comprehensive plan studies and implementation, worked on the CUNA Transportation Task Force, and have been involved in several overpass studies in various locations. We as a community in the past 30 years have experienced strong growth, strong periods of growth, with 10 years of the Great Recession sandwiched in between. When I moved here 30 plus years ago, we traveled on a two-lane road. Since then, development at the state, county, and city level, we have afforded a brand new four-lane road provided by state and federal funds to accommodate the new rooftops. As well, ACHD has constructed some local roadway and sidewalks improvements for the benefit of our community and to facilitate development. But by far, the majority of new roadways, sidewalks, and sewer infrastructure has been provided by subdivision development. And the homes and their tax base have provided the funding for increased fire safety and city services. I'm in joint ownership of 187 acres of land contiguous to the Madrone Heights, and I do support approval of the preliminary plat for Madrone Heights. I've attended the prior public hearings on Madrone Heights, and from my reading of the minutes in the City Council dated 11-2018, it appears that the City Council concerns were based on interpretation of CUNA's comprehensive plan as well as opinions regarding sidewalk safety and for students in UP crossings and opinions regarding general traffic. I would like to suggest that we look at the evidence regarding these areas of concern. I'd like to present that what I consider as evidence regarding the points at issue regarding Madrone Heights and development south of the UP. Discontinuous sidewalks along Avalon and south of the UP compared to the northern side of UP. All 10 schools in CUNA School District are north of the Union Pacific Railroad, comprising approximately 95% of the railroad. We're already done?
Jesus. Doesn't take long, does it?
Anyway, on the north side, I've cited 13 examples of discontinuous sidewalk that were part of there and are still there and need to be addressed. And usually infill is what does that. And then I think the other important things are the studies that have been done. And both of them, the traffic study supports going forward, and the overpass study also says until you get rooftops, you're not going to get an overpass. And we're at that point, so we need the rooftops. And the other point that I'd like to make is that the city police department was on the other side of the railroad tracks for 8 years. City Hall was there, and they serviced the north side, which was the majority of it, that entire time, and it wasn't moved because of safety. So I suggest approval. Thank you.
Questions for Tim?
No.
Thanks, Tim.
Tim, I have one, if you would. There was a letter in here from Dick Deutsch.
Okay.
Did you talk to him in regards to fencing and stuff?
Okay. No.
I'll ask Tim then later.
Okay. I have not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other Tim.
Mr. Mayor and council members, staff would just like to point out that after the packet was submitted to the council, there were some other letters that were received or emails that were received, and I'd like to hand those out at this time. In addition to what staff has already presented at both of the other hearings, staff has nothing further to add to the discussion other than these letters that were received.
Okay.
Thank you, Troy.
Isn't this in here?
Okay, so next we have signed up to testify in opposition, Paula Grigg.
Mayor. I'm Paula Grigg. I've lived here for 33 years, and I've lived on Avalon the whole time. I also worked for the post office on the south side of the tracks for 26 years, so I've had to deal with this train issue all the time I've been here. The Compass study, this is the one I only had, was the 2013, states delays of 3.5 minutes at a rail crossing, the average train speed of 40 to 70 miles, and guessed the population in 2040 would be 11,306. This is a supposed record that they based the need for an overpass. As a person who has lived on Avalon for 33 years, not one item is correct. When they never account for is double trains, changing cars, slow trains, crossing malfunctions, long trains, and the results are traffic backups. All this causes delays to the school, work, and appointments. Also the delay of emergency vehicles. I was late today, actually, for a doctor's appointment. I live 3 minutes from my doctor's appointment. Who leaves 15 minutes early to go there? Every day I get in the car and I listen for the train. If I hear one, I go, oh crap, can I make it before the train gets there? There's 2,100 houses on the south side of the tracks. Translate to 4,000 cars. The backups are horrible. Avalon backs up to 10 Mile, 10 Mile to Yukon, Ash Street to Armand, School to Recess, Swan Falls up to Stagecoach, plus all the other collector streets. After the train, we are all head out only to be stopped by stop signs on both sides. Sometimes clearing the congestion takes 15 to 20 minutes, not 3 minutes. On the return home, the congestion continues. Avalon backs up to Albertsons, and Maine backs up to the roundabout. Developers never understand what mess they leave the town in. They plan to build and leave. The city council, nor the planning and zoning, or the mayor don't deal with this on a daily basis. We on the south side do. We are still part of the CUNA city. Please listen to the residents about this quality of life issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Paula? Thank you very much.
Mayor, could you read the who the letters are from into the record for the recording, please?
The first letter is from Kay Albers, and Rebecca Ward is the second letter. Next, we have signed up to testify, Meg Lawson. Oh, were you wanting to be Falcon Crest? I've noticed your address just now. That's okay. Dean McWiley, probably the same on Cow Horse Drive. Okay. Nancy Simper.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, thank you for this opportunity. My previous testimony opposing Madrone Heights is already in the record, and I just want to restate my opinion that the traffic and safety issues go against the stated goals in the comprehensive plan, as well as city code, and I don't think that the applicant has presented enough evidence that it will address those safety issues and traffic issues. They did estimate an increase of 2,013 vehicle trips per day. As we know, as we've heard, there's already a lot of congestion, especially with the trains during times when children are being driven or bused to and from school. By Councilman Cordoza's estimate, the 206 house development could have around 300 children. I called the CUNA School District Transportation Department, and they estimated that a neighborhood with a size of 300 children would need an extra 10 school buses, and that would clog traffic even more because buses have to stop and wait before they can cross the tracks. Increased drive times to school means earlier mornings and lengthening already long school bus rides. Earlier in the school year, I received an email from the superintendent when they were trying to figure out how to get all the kids, especially on the south side of the tracks where bus rides are longer, to and from school. They have really long routes, but she said part of the problem is they were already short 10 school buses in the district, and that 10 buses would cost $1 million. So that would add to that. The applicants, and this is my point that I really want to hammer home is there's the traffic impact study that they submitted only evaluated that 1 mile section it's on and the Cuna Road and Black Cat intersection, which is the westbound. So this would be people leaving the neighborhood and leaving, like not going towards Cuna, leaving the Cuna area. So what about all the traffic going east into Cuna? And that's what all this discussion about the railroad crossing addresses. And I think it's important to note that when ITD and ACHD gave their approval for this based on the roads, or about the roads, they were only basing it on the traffic impact study that didn't even address these issues with the railroad crossing. In the letter from their lawyers, the applicant asked this matter to be reconsidered with all of the relevant evidence before the council. That was a quote. I'm interested to hear what additional evidence they're presenting, and I think if it doesn't include a formal traffic study on the area between the development and the railroad tracks into town, I don't think they can, if it doesn't include that, I think it should include an impact study or impact report from the CUNA, the fire department, the police department. I think it should include an impact report from the school district, and I don't think that the applicant's fully representing how the proposed development will affect the city. And I know I'm not the only one in the area south of the railroad tracks. I just might be the only one that is okay with coming multiple times. I wish I would have come during the planning and zoning time period when all these things were overlooked, I guess. So you voted to deny it once, and I asked you to stand by that vote. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Kelly Semper. Oh, not testify. Sorry about that. All right. So that was all I had signed up on this one. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up that wanted to? Okay. Thank you. So these last two letters, I'm going to ask our legal a question. So these last two letters that came in, these are just for council to review, or I'm assuming they came in late, so they don't need to be read into the record.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I believe it's been the practice of Planning and Zoning Commission that if they get communications in between these hearings, that they let you know that they've been received, and we try to be very transparent with any communications that anybody receives when a hearing is continued. So
sure.
I think that's the purpose in which they've been presented. I'm not aware, and I'll have to defer to Troy Behuman as to whether or not those persons requested that they be included in the record or not. I don't know. I haven't read them or seen them.
Troy, would you have a comment on that?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, with both of these letters that were submitted, yes, indeed, they were submitted late. Staff needs everything submitted at least a couple of hours before our deadline, which is 5 o'clock on Thursdays before the meeting. Because of the nature of these letters, they do address the council directly, so I would assume that they did want it part of the record. In fact, with Kay Albers' letter, she addresses it and starts it off with CUNA City Council.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. So the question is before council.
Wasn't there a rebuttal?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Mr. Eck.
Good evening, Mayor, Steering Council members. My name is Tim Eck, the applicant, 6152 West Affman Lane. Before I read my little transcript here, I'll just go over a couple of highlights. The school and fire districts have had no comment on the project. The study, the traffic study, is is defined, the area, the scope is defined by ACHD. They're the experts. They decide the area and the size of the area that has to be studied. The study did identify traffic throughout the State Highway 69. ITD's only concern was the impact of State Highway 69. Once they read the traffic impact study, they realized there was little to no impact. I think it was less than 1% impact on State Highway 69. So the study goes beyond just the one-mile segment that's referred to. So I'll put on my grubby glasses here and read my narrative. As presented by Mr. Gordon, the majority of the roadway, sidewalk, sewer, water, and irrigation infrastructure improvements completed in CUNA are the result of subdivision improvement. The resulting tax base generated by the rooftops provides the funding and increased fire safety and city services. Sidewalks are the result of residential subdivision and commercial improvement. With an almost non-existent exception, all of the sidewalks within CUNA were built as part of subdivision improvements. Mr. Gordon provided a small sampling of road segments without sidewalks. This sample is consistent throughout all of CUNA. It's also consistent throughout all cities in Idaho. The sidewalks are constructed across all subdivision boundaries as they are built, and as development fills in, the sidewalks become continuous. We will have boundary sidewalks, about a quarter mile of frontage sidewalk on CUNA Road, and a quarter mile of frontage sidewalk on the Mid-Mile Collector, plus all of our internal sidewalks. Beyond the subdivision boundaries, deficiencies in off-site sidewalk network are system improvements under the Idaho Development Impact Fee Act. Every lot in the subdivision makes impact fee payments to ACHD to fund system improvements. The right-of-way for CUNA Road is approximately 66 to 68 feet wide. The road width from fog line to fog line is approximately 22 feet. Thus, there's significant gravel shoulder on both sides of CUNA Road from Black Cat to 10 Mile for pedestrian traffic. The traffic impact study at pages 35 and 36 show the wide shoulders along CUNA Road. At 10 Mile and extending west, right-of-way has been widened and sidewalks have been constructed where development has occurred. At Madrone Heights, CUNA Road frontage right-of-way will be widened to 37 feet from centerline, eventually resulting in a 74-foot right-of-way. Paving will be widened to 17 feet from centerline, plus a 3-foot gravel shoulder and a 5-foot sidewalk will be constructed across the frontage, on top of other improvements that we have to make to that segment of road with right turns, left turns, center lanes. Let's see. Sewer services has been addressed. Public Works has testified they will provide a will serve letter for 5.2 dwelling units per gross acre, the exact density we've applied for. It should be remembered that CUNA previously pre-sold sewer connections in an effort to kickstart funding of major sewer system improvements, including the CUNA North Wastewater Treatment Plant. A large block of prepaid connections were sold by CUNA for $2,000, $2 million, conditioned on guaranteed connections to the CUNA South Wastewater Treatment System. Subsequently, through purchase agreements, that was ratified by CUNA as resolution R53-2015, we acquired ownership of the majority of these prepaid CUNA South wastewater treatment connections. We all know the history of the LID, assessments. Ultimately, the payment of the EDU assessments guarantee the property owner capacity in the wastewater treatment facilities. Currently, we still own 182 South plant connections and approximately 1,600 North plant connections. Denial of development south of the tracks deprives us of our rights to use the south plant connections we own. In addition, it makes all of the south plant EDUs valueless, including those owned by KeyBank. Traffic-related safety has been addressed. Upon review of the traffic impact study, Idaho Transportation Department withdrew any concerns or objections they had about the project. The traffic impact study has identified any and all areas of concern and proposed mitigation. ACHD has reviewed the traffic impact study, accepted it, and rendered their staff report. The staff report identifies all mitigation required by the applicant in order to maintain all acceptable levels of service and safety. The property is approximately 1.8 miles from Station 1, and EMS service to the property meets average response times in the city limits, which is 4 to 6 minutes. CUNA did this phenomenal crossing study a few years back. It was identified in that crossing study, an extensive and detailed study that cost ACHD in the city, I believe it was in excess of $40,000, determined that the average train crossings per day were 20. The average crossing arm downtime was 2.5 minutes. That's 3.47% of the day the arms are down. It takes 3 minutes, 8 seconds to drive from the fire station to our project, and even with a 2.5 minute delay, we're under 6 minutes. Well under the 4 to 6 minute average response time that the Cuna Fire Department claimed in their recent levy request. And they also identified the fact that areas at the south extreme of their boundary can take up to 20 minutes. It's not because of the train, it's because it's clear out Swan Falls Road. It's a long way out there. Going north, they only got to go about 2 miles and they're at their boundary. So, you know, we're well within the first responder response time. We meet, you know, all the conditions. All ACHD policies are complied with. All City of Cuna code is complied with. ACHD gives us a staff report with their conditions of approval. And the City of Cuna has given us a recommendation for, well, Planning and Zoning has given a recommendation of approval with conditions. And we plan to meet all those conditions and produce another nice subdivision. We're not a one and done. We're here. We spent a lot of money improving the road infrastructure. I think that's most of what I have to say. I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for Mr. Eck. So I have one. We had a letter from Dick Deutsch. He owns the, do you know him?
Mr. Okay. Deutsch.
So he owns a property adjacent, and his concern was the cattle and fences, I guess. And he said that he'd discussed with you, and
yeah,
did you come to a resolution with him?
We repeatedly agreed. His concern is that the standard barricade, when, you know, we have to build a CUNA-compliant fence around our entire subdivision boundary, which is 6 foot by. And then where the stub streets go into his property, generally you have to put up the ACHD required barricades, and then generally a couple of pieces of barbed wire, and he's concerned that that might not keep his cattle in. We've agreed that upon approval from ACHD, we would just continue the fence straight through. It's being done more often now. Instead of just putting up temporary barricades, we put the fence straight through, we hang little barricade strips on the fence, and he was thrilled with that because it'll help keep his cattle in. There was also conversation about doing that on the other stub street that extends to Mr. Gordon's property, and we'll do it either way. Whatever, if he wants the fence, if he wants the barricades, it doesn't matter, one or the other.
Can they just have grazing rights to the neighbors' yards?
Only if they plant sod.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Eck?
No, thank you.
I got a quick question for you. You mentioned ACHD had done, I mean, when you talk about kind of the way they looked at it, a traffic impact study, Nancy brings up a good point in that everything you see in the study talks about Cuna Road westbound to Black Cat. You referenced Highway 69, but nowhere in between this traffic impact study does it reference any street, any corridor, anything. ACHD, yes, was concerned about Highway 69 because that is their concern. But what does that have to say about anything that happens in the traffic impact study that is eastbound when the traffic impact study only does reference westbound to Black Cat?
Well, ACHD establishes the study area. Kittleson will come back in with a scope of work of all of the travel lanes, the intersections, in a very broad area around the planned development. Then ACHD will come back and amend that scope of work and tell them exactly everything they need to study. And they base this on their years of expertise and all of their traffic personnel at the highway district. You know, they already have a good feeling of what things are going to look like in the areas that have to be studied. And they focus the traffic impact study on the areas that they know are going to be impacted. Areas beyond the traffic impact study are believed to be of insignificant impact. So they address everything that they need to study, and then they'll get a second bite at the apple. When the traffic impact study comes in, ACHD will study the results of that traffic impact study, and then based on the information they have, they'll decide if more area needs to be studied. And then they'll, if they find that more area needs to be studied, then they'll kick out a supplemental instruction to study a few more intersections and a few more road segments. And in this case, they were satisfied with the results of the study as it first came in with the original scope. So they didn't feel that there was anything beyond that area that had been studied that needed further study. And they're the ones that are going to make us do all the improvements. And they study levels of service, and everything in the study at full build out still needs their levels of service.
Okay.
ACHD is here if you have questions for them, Warren.
Further questions for Tim?
No.
All right.
Thank
you. Wendy, I'll put you on the spot. So, I don't know what goes on down there because I don't get to be a part of those meetings, but police and fire come to a lot of meetings down there. Do those have to do with developments of this type? Is that why they're there, so they can see what's going on and comment there, even though they don't do one in writing?
They actually go to the pre-app meetings to take a look at what the developer's concept plan is and make any suggestions at that point of changes that may be needed for their agencies.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they keep me on this end of the building.
Warren, I know that you were one of the no votes last time and had some specific concerns. Have those been addressed to your liking, or where are you at this point?
They certainly did ease some of those concerns, but there is still some questions I do have. ACHD may be able to help me out with one of these. More or less, a lot of it has to do with the eastbound, because the concern with that traffic heading into CUNA is a very warranted concern, and that was a big part of the no vote. But can I get ACHD to come up to the mic? Sorry,
David.
David, thank
you.
Again. Thank you. So when you look at, Tim had touched on this, a traffic study, and you focus on one area and see, okay, that's sufficient enough. We don't need to focus anywhere else. When you look at where this development is located, in a situation like this, heading into town, over railroad tracks and things like that, is it something you looked at the westbound route and said, oh, that's going to be fine, so we don't even need to look at eastbound? Like, where do you guys gauge your decisions on not further researching how this traffic will be impacted?
Good question.
Sorry, put you on the spot like this.
Mayor Steer, Councilmember Christensen, so what we're looking at is really considering sort of the broader compass models and projected traffic volumes within an area, right? And so when we get that development and somebody comes in to do a TIS, what we're looking at is sort of the extent to which we forecast those traffic impacts to occur. And in this case, what was proposed was what was determined to be necessary by our traffic engineers. I, unfortunately, am not a traffic engineer, so I can't get too much into the specifics on exactly why that was their determination, but that's kind of the basis on which they're making it, is based on sort of the broader transportation model that they're working off of.
Okay. And did you state your name?
David Corcoran, ACHD 3775 Adams Street, Garden City.
Just for the record, we'd like to have you on recording. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. I don't necessarily have further questions, but the concerns still carry, so if there wants to be questions that arise from it, I'll explain them. One of those does talk about the eastbound traffic, and when we talk about the shoulder expansion and things like that, Tim had mentioned 22-foot gravel, and then, with the extended gravel shoulders that do go all the way down. I did drive that route today. There's only about a foot of shoulder, and then it's dirt. And it goes from 35 to 50 right there. yes, it's a very small percentage of kids that are going to be attending that school just right there, but it's also an open field play park, which they do take care of in the neighborhood, but that's still, kids are still going to be up and down that street. People do not slow down to 35 at that 35 mile per hour mark. This neighborhood does extend into that 50 mile an hour mark, which does also reference that ITD, or I'm sorry if I'm referencing the wrong division, doesn't stay the necessity to lower the speed limit. There's still that strong safety concern there for me. The sidewalks in front of the neighborhood, they do definitely take care of a lot of those concerns, but that still does not help what Councilmember Cardoza and I were talking about from the stance of these kids are going to be walking to and from school. They are too close to the school to be bused. They're going to be on 50-mile-an-hour roads. Those shoulders are only about 18 inches at most, and then just dirt. Do they extend? Yes. But is it just dirt? Yes. They're still going to be having to walk it. So from that safety standpoint, yes, I'm worried about that. From the standpoint of all the percentages and things about how often those arms are down, I was on the south side of the tracks for an hour today. I still waited for two different trains back to back for 10 minutes, and I had to wait 5 minutes just to pull out on Acuna Road. There is traffic concerns there. There is still safety concerns there. They have eased a lot of those concerns, but it's still warranted in my head to have those concerns. So
from your perspective, what specific things would the applicant be able to do to remediate those issues? It sounds like for one of them, the answer might be working with ACHG to try to get speed limit changed to 35 miles per hour for a specific section of road. What else?
You have to look at the bigger picture. If people are waiting, if trains stop on that, there's still 30, 45 minutes people have waited. When there is back-to-back trains, there's still people that wait 15, 20 minutes to even move. There's nothing they can do to satisfy that concern.
Okay. Yes, please.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, just a matter to help you with your deliberation here, your concerns. On the safety issues, make sure that any deliberation and decision you make is based on testimony presented at these hearings or in any of the evidence that you've received and admitted into evidence. You can use any information you may have on your own to assist you in understanding the evidence that's produced, but you can't rely on your own inspections and information as a basis of your decision. So I'm not telling you what way to decide on this. I'm just saying you've got to rely on the record produced before you, not upon your own investigation. Thank you.
That's fair. So let me extend on that then. So in the record, there's going to be 2013 trips per day that do come out of this. Okay. There was no traffic impact study done eastbound on those 2013 trips, albeit there's going to be some go westbound, some go eastbound. So from a traffic standpoint, those added trips are going to add a dilemma when it does come to those train crossings. The speed limit itself is also in record as stating there's no warranted reason to lower the speed limit based on these studies. It does hit 50 miles an hour at that subdivision from 35, and that's asking people to slow down coming eastbound from that direction to hit 35 miles an hour, but they don't hit that till even after the subdivision.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but in terms of that last one,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how the developer would have control over whether or not people obey the law, right? Because the law would be that you slow down to 35. I think the reason that this got continued and reopened was in order for the prior decision to be legally defensible, we needed to be able to provide specific remedial actions that the applicant could take that would make the application acceptable. And so that's what I'm just trying to flesh out a little bit, if there are specific things that we could add as conditions of approval or that sort of thing, or you know what I mean?
So I didn't even vote. I had a no vote to begin with on this from the rezoning annexation for concerns like this. I had a no vote at the first initial vote on this due to the city code and ordinance of 6.2.3, section F. I didn't feel that the accommodation of these 2013 trips would suffice from a public standpoint when it comes to schooling. From the added buses that Nancy brought in here with her saying 10 trips a day, that does put a strain on the school system. There's nothing I can tell this developer right now that says, please satisfy these conditions based on how I have felt about this development from the beginning.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to explain like what we need to provide from a legally defensible point of view. And we continued the first hearing so that we could get more information to try to address some concerns and that sort of thing. I guess the concern I'm having is that we can't just say, or maybe you are just saying that there's, you won't approve any subdivision moving forward.
I'm talking about this subdivision.
I know
this subdivision.
But you're saying like, oh, if adding 10 buses is too much for the school district. So it sounds like you're saying we're not going to approve anything at all if it's going to require, I don't know if it's okay. 10 or more buses or.
Well, and we can talk about that at the next development when it's in a different location.
So it's not the number of buses, it's the
so
location of the
subdivision?
So when
you talk about the location and the lack of the ITD disbursement going eastbound on that road, when it does back up to that degree, that does put a strain on the schooling system. So I will talk about this development in that location. I'm not going to approve anything because of that moving forward.
So it's not the number of buses? To make sure I'm understanding you correctly, it's not the number of buses. It's still just a traffic issue?
Okay, it is. From that standpoint, exactly when we talk, it's a traffic issue. But when you also talk about the public school system, it is an issue from that perspective. Yes.
I guess the only problem that I would have with that is that the school didn't comment on. And we asked them to make comment.
I guess when
ITD denied, it's because they didn't see something, and then when they saw that, then they came back and reversed their opinion. But with the schools, before they went to bond, there was a lot of meetings going on, and the city provided them with what we thought growth would occur, and a number of people and number of homes, and they based their bond that they went and asked for on those numbers. And so, I can't say that I think the school is concerned with that. I think that's their issue, same as fire and police. So, we might have those concerns, but when they don't comment, it makes it really hard for us to say that there is a problem.
So who was it then, I guess, to remind me, that asked for them to comment on this specific development?
They're always sent. Actually, Troy, do you want to come up and just kind of explain that, if you would, please?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Christensen. I believe the question is, who gets notified of these developments? Is that it?
Well, I'm asking who. With this particular development, who was it that asked for a comment? Do they every development they get notified? Is it pretty
so? The procedure is we have a list of agencies and utility providers, ACHD being one of them, Boise Project Board of Control is another, the school district, the fire district, the
Central
police,
district health.
Central District Health, DEQ, Idaho Power, just. That's just naming a few of them. I believe there's about 15 or 16 agencies or utility providers, cable TV. and we send out a packet of information. And we give them every opportunity to review the packet, just like you folks do. And they have a comment period. We give them 15 business days, which is actually the better part of a month. And we're very accommodating. When ACHD does not get us the reports that we know are coming, we actually delay the public hearing. We've done that multiple times. This developer actually has been delayed at least 3 or 4 times. He was delayed one entire year because a traffic impact study did not meet the warrants for ACHD. Eventually, it came around, and they provided what they needed. ACHD then accepted their traffic impact study. The school district is one of those agencies that we request. We don't just send them the information. We specifically ask them if there are any comments or any concerns that you have about the services you provide, please notify us and send us a writing. If you need more time or if you need more information, we will be happy to accommodate that. We did not receive anything from the school district about this project.
Thank you. Sir. And so then therein lies the problem for us is that we can't deny things because we want to or because someone tells us to. We have to have some kind of legal basis for that. And certainly safety concerns can provide for a legal basis. However, we do have to give the developer a chance to mediate, give them some direction on what they could do to mediate in order to make the process go or make the project move forward. And so that's why this came back, is because we didn't do that last time. And so they asked that we do that. So, I mean, they deserve to get a chance to at least mitigate whatever problems we think they need to mitigate, as long as they're reasonable.
Right, and I think reasonable and something they, I mean, reasonable is a little different than what they can actually do, because they stated time and time again their restrictions tonight. I cannot stress to you how nervous it makes me to have extreme limited shoulders in a section of Cuna Road that is 50 miles an hour where they cannot build sidewalks on.
Part of that, though, the road currently is how it is. You mm-hmm. witnessed it firsthand for yourself. I drove that way the other day and kind of looked around, too. When they have to go down the side of the road or down the middle of the road, however it is, they have to get their utilities to this project, if approved, then they will have to reconstruct back to a wider standard than what it is now. The developer stated that, and you know, he said what the gravel impact would be versus what it is now in his testimony. So it's going to be wider than what you're seeing now. I'm concerned about the kids walking up and down the road too, but like Mr. Gordon stated in his testimony that he didn't even get finished, but I read his letter, there's sections like that all over that kids are walking down the side of the road that where it's 50 miles an hour. I mean, Hubbard between Linder and 10 miles, prime example. And I don't approve of that. I wish there was something we could do, but like he stated, until growth punches a sidewalk through, what do? We accommodate our kids. We're our own Uber drivers, I guess.
And so one thing we have done to mediate that in the past, and we're just coming up on that now, is each year we go through our 5-year plan with Ada County Highway District, and we list projects on there that we see that need to happen. So a good project to go on there would be one that will put sidewalks in where development will not likely occur, because, you know, a lot of the houses there along Avalon have been there for a lot of years, and it's chances are they're not going to tear those out and do anything different with them. So we can go through things like that in our 5-year plan, and like Mr. Eck had mentioned, they pay impact fees, and that's where those dollars go, is into that type of project to help mediate those safety concerns. So, I mean, there is things we can do about it. It may not be today, but I think the one point that we like to mention is that these projects, they don't build out immediately. It takes a little while to get there, which gives us a little time to work on some other projects to help mediate the safety issues and that type of thing. So, and I hate to put you in the position of the only one, since Mr. Cardoza decided to have surgery today.
No, it's definitely fine. I see the reasonable things that they can do and the things that they just can't do. And the amount of cars this is going to add, the amount of people on that side of the tracks right now it's going to add, in the location that it's in, it's still, you know, I don't know if there's any more I can say or ask about this at this point, but it just does not.
Would it be helpful if we, I hate to say this, delayed this one more time and got specific feedback from ACHD about why they determined they didn't need to look at traffic outside of the area that was looked at? Would that be helpful at all, or
well,
not really?
That answer definitely would help answer a question I had tonight. Mm-hmm. That's just one of a few concerns I've had from the beginning. So I think we're in a position right now where there's not much more we can push forward with this. There's not much more we can push forward in your guys' heads. There's not much more you can push forward in my head. We're in a position we're in today just based on the three times we have pushed this off and things that we have seen.
I believe ACHD has some information he would like to let the council know.
Okay.
Again, David Corcoran, ACHD, Mayor Steer, council members. One thing to note that I think is useful is that you've actually already been on the ball on this. So last year we went out and we looked at what it would take to install sidewalks, at least on Avalon east of 10 Mile. And so we're kind of working through that right now and what that will take and how to make that happen. The other thing to note, just to sort of clarify a little bit more as to why the traffic study seems to mostly focus on the west, is if you look at, I think he submitted an exhibit of influence map that sort of shows kind of, I think, pretty well how the trips would be shifted, and it does show a lot of them going to the west and going north at Black Cat. The remainder of them, while 2013 trips may seem like a lot, it's really not all that many over... So if you look at the traffic counts on a residential collector, they tend to be pretty, in the four figures already. And once you get, to some percentage of 2013, it's not a huge number. So just wanted to throw that out there. But otherwise, with that, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Well, I guess, so if someone actually came and said why ACHD didn't go any further, would that really change anything? I mean, I
guess why they didn't go any further would not change anything. I would just want to see what if they had gone further. Because I do truly think, and even based on what other people have said tonight, the eastbound concern heading into town over the tracks is what people want to look at and see.
So you would be suggesting a larger traffic impact study?
Something that would be beyond. that would have been helpful in this, yes.
So even if traffic engineers come in and explain why, from their expert perspective, that additional study would not be necessary, you still would vote no until that study was done?
Is that what's making me look at a no vote? That only piece of item, no. Would it help if I received that data and had seen that data? It might have. I don't know. I don't know what the data would have said.
So one thing we could do is, and ACHD probably has these available already, is they look at, they have those little traffic counters all over the place, and they look at the level of service at each intersection. It's highly possible we could get a map that shows us level of service, where they're at, what's predicted, and that type of thing. I mean, we can probably get those kind of figures for you for future developments. I don't think that would help us in this case, but it might help give you a broader picture of what ACHD is looking at, at least, and that type of thing.
I think it'd be important.
Okay. So I guess we just need to figure out if we're going to move forward here tonight or where we're at. Okay, quick one.
Jeff Bauer again for the record. We, as ACHD indicated, there is a study in the traffic impact study. It's an appendix. I don't believe it was included in your packet, but I did attach it to my letter. And it does show the traffic impacts going east. It doesn't do a full study or analysis of level of service or safety, but it analyzes the percentage of traffic that will increase based on our project. And that is in your packet already.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On 287 is his letter.
In iBooks or just in the packet itself?
Overall. Actually, here's this if you want to just look at mine. That's the start, and just scroll over. Mine actually is in documents, so it goes sideways.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a percentage base of total overall traffic heading that way, if I read that right. I hadn't seen that. So. I think furthering details moving forward, though, to include eastbound traffic studies would be important to get the detailed figures on things. Because ultimately, that's a lot of the concern of where it lies with a lot of people.
Are you talking about for other applications, like in the future? Okay. Point of clarification, counsel. Because I know we've already had one hearing on this. We were just wanting to double check. Is this still a normal vote where it's just a majority approval or denial? Or
yes.
Okay. So is there additional information that would be helpful to you, or was I here? Okay.
Thoughts?
Do we have to close the evidence presentation before we start deliberating?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, in the past we've had circumstances, as you have with this hearing, where you have commenced deliberation and did deliberation and then received a request for a continuance and you granted that, and that's what you're having today. So if in your deliberation you determine that there would be more relevant evidence that would support a decision that you want to make that you don't have, then I think you have the right to reopen the hearing, articulate what information it is that you need, and then set a date and time. And you've done that once before in this particular proceeding.
Okay, but so we would need to actually close evidence presentation prior to moving to deliberation, and then we just need to reopen it if necessary?
I think that's the best process to follow. Otherwise, it's like you're going in and out of deliberation, and it gets to be a debate with the people who are the proponents and the opponents, and it, I think it's cleaner if you move from one to the other.
Okay. All right. I move we close evidence presentation.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close evidence presentation in this case. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Well, and now I'm wondering if I prematurely did that. I know that the can has been kicked down the road several times. I guess the only open question in my mind is whether it would be beneficial to get a definitive answer from ACHD engineers on why they chose to just do the scope of study that they did. However, I also acknowledge that they are the experts and the traffic engineers, and so whether they explain to me why they chose to do that or not, I don't know if it makes a huge difference in the sense that we kind of have to defer to them in terms of traffic issues. What are your thoughts?
I would agree. I'm not a traffic engineer, and from what they've presented to us and planning and zoning staff, they are in approval of it, so I'm set where I'm at now.
Okay.
One.
The only reason to move on is not maybe to provide further evidence, but to allow Richard back into the mix. And there's really no purpose moving forward for that at this point. But
do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that we're going to have any difference. We're still going to hear the same testimony. We're still going to be in the same position we are tonight. So I think continuing it is just continuing it. And I just don't think we're going to get anywhere by dragging it out anymore.
Do you have anything else? So overall, I understand the concerns that have been raised, and I think the challenging part for us is the idea that we have to look to our partner agencies whose, like, job, literally, it is to figure out some of these concerns. So in terms of traffic studies and their scope and what sort of impacts would need to be looked at, we have to defer to ACHD. In terms of safety, we have to defer to the fire department and the police department. In terms of busing and schools and things of that nature, we have to defer to the school district. We did continue this initially because ITD had raised an objection. And so we said, let's, you know, find out from that agency, because traffic is their bailiwick, you know, what those concerns are and if there's any way that they can be mitigated. And when they did respond, they withdrew their objection. I just don't feel like it's legally defensible for me to second guess agencies whose entire responsibility it is to make these decisions and considerations and provide feedback. So that's kind of what I'm struggling with. I hear the concerns, and I don't want folks to think that we're not listening to them, but I mean, we've tried to, I know Warren has been one who's been particularly concerned, and we've tried to figure out, like, are there specific remedial actions that can be taken, and we're not able to uncover any, it doesn't seem like. So legally we would need to be able to do that if we were going to say no. The Planning and Zoning Commission did review this and also forwarded a recommendation of approval. That does, I think, make a difference to me in terms of yet another entity that's tasked with specific functions, weighing in and I guess educating our deliberation. It does appear to me that the request is in compliance with the comp plan. I don't see that it violates Idaho State Code or CUNA City Code. So my preference or suggestion, I guess, would be to move ahead with having staff prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order of decision for approval for the proposal.
Second.
It's not actually a motion yet, but you agree with that?
Okay. Yes.
Then I will make it a motion. All right. Well, then I move that we direct staff to prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order of decision for approval by council at the next council meeting that supports approving case number 1802S.
Second.
All right, motion is made and seconded to direct staff to create a finding of facts and conclusions of law for approval for, I lost the number, case number 18-02-S. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
That motion carries. All right, that brings us to item 7C, continuation of a public hearing to accept testimony regarding the final draft of the development agreement and the additional emails entered into evidence at the public hearing held January 2nd, 2019, and consideration to approve 18-03-AN annexation, 18-01-CPM comp map change, 18-04-ZC rezone, 18-02-PUD planned unit development, 1804-S preliminary plat, and DA development agreement for Falcon Crest subdivision. Mark Tate with M3 Companies requests approval to annex approximately 990 acres into CUNA city limits, change the comprehensive plan map from agricultural to mixed use for approximately 163 acres for a planned unit development for approximately 1,028 acres total. to rezone approximately 20 acres and subdivide approximately 132 acres into 409 residential lots, 51 common lots, 4 common driveway lots, 2 well lots, and private roads. This site is located at the northeast corner of Cloverdale and Cuna Roads, Cuna, Idaho. So this is a continuation of the public hearing, and again, the continuation was based on hearing testimony regarding the final draft of the development agreement, so the changes in there, and then also for council to discuss, if needed, anything on those additional emails that were presented. Again, we'll do the 10-minute presentation, 3 minutes testimony, and then a 5-minute rebuttal. So we can start with Mark Tate.
Good evening, Mayor Steer. Mark Tate, 1087 West River Street, Boise, Idaho, 83702. For the record, I appreciate you having me back here. I will be brief. In summary, last time you closed the public hearing and limited the scope of testimony today to the development agreement and to the letters that were added to the record. As far as the development agreement goes, I don't have a lot to add, but I will be able to answer any questions that you may have on it or anything that arises in rebuttal. Regarding the letters, it looked like a lot of the same comments and concerns that were brought up during the public hearing that we discussed at great length, namely the question of density and traffic, and the ruralness of the area. Really, that's all, in my mind, combined into kind of one issue of density and change to the neighborhood. This last item that was in front of you was a 40-acre subdivision at 5 units per acre. That is a suburban density development of single-family houses. I remind you that our project is 2.25 units per acre, less than half of the density of that project that you just had in front of you. 2.25 units per acre is a low density. The total number of units on the project with a maximum of 2,300, it sounds enormous, but it is going to be built out in phase over many years. When you add a lot of 40-acre projects at 5 units per acre, it adds up very, very quickly, as you know. Our project is going to be master planned, thoughtfully designed. It's contiguous development to each other, which is a wonderful aspect of master plan development, where you don't have these gaps in sidewalks and transportation concerns that you run into when you do have, hopscotch type of development, where they're just smaller pieces developing over time. That's why we love the idea of this site as a master plan community. It is one large contiguous ownership. The golf courses are already there, 36 holes of golf, and it really is a perfect setting for an upscale community. And I remind you that our first phase plat would be part of an age-restricted portion. There are other parts that would not be age-restricted. And a reminder, just like the other project, we have been through ACHD. We have been approved on that front as well. The other theme that we addressed, that's addressed in the letters at length that we discussed at the hearing, really appreciated the city's consultant being here at the last meeting. I thought that really added a lot of valuable testimony and expert testimony on the issue of water. Just to reiterate his comments about, a robustly recharged aquifer, quickly moving underneath, which, both of those things have resulted in minimizing impacts to neighborhood wells. And the development agreement does call for a plan B if a water line is called for. So that is addressed already in the development agreement. Had spoke at length about, the test wells, the process that the city goes through and plans to go through here. So I won't reiterate any more on that. I felt like you know, his testimony was pretty clear on, you know, really speaking to the volumes of water available and you know, feeling that it seemed like an appropriate place, and he didn't seem to have a lot of concerns. So that's all I have to say. I'd stand for questions.
Okay. Questions for Mark?
Not at this time, please. Okay.
Thank you. All right. So, again, this is a public hearing. Was there anybody who wished to testify in this matter that didn't get a chance to sign up on the sign-in sheet? There was a couple that were on the other ones, and I've transferred your names over. So, okay. Troy.
Mr. Mayor, council members, Troy Behunin, senior planner, planner three. You know, Planning and Zoning Department. So your packets have been reformatted for to give you the requested information from the January 2nd meeting. For whatever reason, the development agreement wasn't as complete as it really was. It was already in its final form at that time. It just didn't make the packet, and I apologize for that. However, the packet that you were just given last week for tonight's hearing that included the development agreement, it does include the two missing items. It talks about the prevailing party, which is actually on page 33 of the document. Its section number is 14.1.7, and the assignees, that was the other section that was missing. That's actually on page 35 of the development agreement. And its section is 18.1.1.1. And staff would just like to reiterate that there were some discussions about a section of the development agreement that was missing about a secondary plan for potable water. That is also in there. It's on page 18, 5.2.1.2. Staff doesn't need to add any more to the discussion. Other than that, we stand by the presentation made last time. And other than that, I won't add anything to the record. I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Okay. No. Questions for Troy?
None at this time. Thanks.
No, thanks, Troy.
Thank you. All right. So like I said, I did move a couple of names over to this sign-up sheet from the other one. So if I don't call your name and you did sign up, just raise your hand and I'll correct that. So we'll begin with Scott Erickson. He's signed up neutral and to testify. Scott, if you would just state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Scott Erickson, 6350 Raining Horse Drive, Kuna, Idaho. Just a few comments this evening. I've been living on the corner of Raining Horse Drive and Cloverdale Road for 23 years, very happily. I've really enjoyed quite fond of the sunrises to the east, pointing out that in the wintertime, the sun rises way over next to the water tower at Desert View. And in the summertime, at the solstice, it's way over on the foothills, and I get to see that every morning. I love it. Way more than the glow of the prison lights off there to the east. That said, the glow of the prison lights is a diffused amber, much, much better than a car lot with those really, really bright white LEDs. So I think one of the key points is as a development, you know, were to be approved, light is important, and I think there are technologies out there that can help that situation.
So we did, some of these things we've already discussed and closed out on, so we're down to the development agreement. Yep. And then those letters that came. So,
I think all that it involved deserves some credit for building incredible golf courses in three phases. There's the small course that I enjoy playing and kids of all ages, including myself. There's a championship course, and I feel that if we really think about this long term, we could consider high-rise hotels and feeding PGA tournaments out in this part of the valley. So I'd encourage some comments or some very careful thought about, are we thinking really big enough about what we might consider a part of the valley? Are we calling that East Kuna? Are we calling it South Kuna? Are we calling it South Urban Center, what do we call it, and what do we prepare for? Because right now, I'm really enjoying the raptors, the bees, my neighbor grows the best honey on the planet. Things that we want, I think, as people should give voice to. So the last comment I have on that is really think very large about what are we doing for our kids as kids in the generations to come to foster. There's a reason CUNA is the, I'm told, second fastest growing town in our nation. I struggle to wrap my head around that. I love Falcon Crest, and I love living there, and I love this town. I'm not sure we're quite thinking big enough when every single day, everywhere I need a service, a doctor appointment, a school, some groceries, a six-pack of beer, gasoline, anything, I'm driving. Everybody's driving. There is nothing there. So whether it's 50 homes or 1,000 or 2,500, to me it's irrelevant. Everybody's driving everywhere for everything. And I think we should very, very carefully develop out the services in line with any kind of a development. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. And so I'll just comment to that. That's one reason that we've hired on an economic development director. A lot of those things come to a community based on population. That's why we don't have a lot of those things already. But we are looking to the future for that type of thing. So.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Bill Terry.
Hi, thanks for bringing me back. Bill Terry, 6169 Rain Horse, right off the corner of Rain Horse and Cloverdale, across the way. As part of the Cloverdale Ridge Water Corporation and the residents around there, we have a little presentation. I know it's going to take more than my 3 minutes, so we're going to divide it up between the three of us, and this is all continuing on. I was one of the people who submitted a letter to you folks, and that's all part of this. So I can give you a copy if you want it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Basically what this says is Cloverdale Ridge Water Corporation, the affected residents of the proposed Falcon Crest subdivision, which is us. We urge the council go ahead.
Let's time out on this time for just a minute,
sure.
Please. So this gets way deeper into what we were going to hear tonight. So what I, and I'm not necessarily opposed to that, but I would like to ask council's blessing on if we want to go this deep into this again tonight. If we do that, then we're also going to have to accept rebuttals and that in the same format.
I thought we already got some rebuttal him at the start to our letters and things that we talked about last time. So I thought that door was already open. And also Richard Cardoza, who's one of the people who golf out there, I noticed he's visibly absent. He said for surgery or something. So all those things said, yes, we'd like to speak our mind. And if that's available at another time, happy to be there then or now, however you want to do it. But
okay, I'll leave the question up to council. We can.
Not having seen the presentation yet, I'm not sure what all it includes.
It's all right there. We opted to. We were going to give a overhead projector, but we understand there was all kinds of requirements that we didn't meet, so we were doing it this way. We're all sticking to 3 minutes.
I, like, leafing through and just looking at some of the headings, it appears to largely, I mean, assuming the heading is accurate, it appears to largely, if not totally, I can't say if it's totally or not because I looked at every page, meet, I think, with what we said. I think the trouble with maybe having a really clearly defined scope of what tonight's hearing is to encompass, I think the biggest issue is, you know, one of the things that we said we'd accept additional testimony on was the emails, but not having read the emails yet because they were ex parte, I didn't necessarily know all of what was in there, and they weren't read into the record at that point, so I don't know that it was super clearly defined necessarily if we're just talking about the fact that they were received or the content of the emails or whatever. So given that little bit of lack of clarity, if you will, my preference is probably to err on the side of allowing more and then deciding if, you know, if anything should be excluded after we've heard it. You know, you don't know if it's relevant until you hear what it is, kind of an argument. So I think that would be my preference. I would like to err on the side of being more permissive.
And although I'm not allowed to second that, that's certainly a good point. I would tell you from my perspective on my email, which was one of the however many.
So we need to debate this out up here first.
Okay.
And then we'll get to that. Greg, what do you think?
I'd be willing to hear more just to see what they have brought and want to present.
Okay.
Mark? Yeah, I agree. Could be very relevant to what we were.
All right, you may go ahead and start your presentation.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
you bet.
That.
Thank you.
Well, we urge the council to create an opportunity for the city to work with the affected community. We urge the city of CUNA to hear our request that to ensure that this subdivision will not use the groundwater that affects us as neighbors. We know that we'd like to see you set up a groundwater trust fund to ensure that the wells of Falcon Crest neighbors are not impacted negatively. Apparently, we did some research, and this has been used by the city of CUNA before, setting up this trust fund. I know they said that there's been these existing wells out there for years and years, according to the person that they brought in. But after living out there for 25 years, I've noticed that they never have ever, when it was Cloverdale Nursery, watered year-round. It was strictly during in-season, same as we do. We urge the council to slow this down. Do not approve the R12 rezoning development. I know even on Channel 7 tonight, I heard the developer saying how 2.2 per is what they want to zone it at. Well, why do we have an R12 in there then? Why not pull that down to an R4? I think you don't do that, you only do R6s, but bring that down. We don't need all those people in there. That's way, way, way too many for the roads and the water. We urge the council to study the impacts before approving the developments. There's been nothing done to determine impacts. As our subdivision, we drilled a new well 8 years ago, and we ran into high sulfur content. When we irrigate, you can smell that sulfur. It's very, very high. We also ran into geothermal, where we got down there, the water was too hot, we weren't allowed to use it. And what are they going to run into? We don't know. So with that, I will leave it for my next person to come up and follow up. Any questions so far?
And I thank so you that's much. Go ahead. John Lawson.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, council members, nice to see you again. John Lawson on Cow Horse Drive. The second phase of this, I want to talk about the development agreement. Just to set the record straight, we didn't see the development agreement until the 7th, which is a little over a week ago. We had no information on what was in it that was changed or anything. So none of us have seen the development agreement at all, except what we found online. So I think that's an important thing. I think a key thing for us in the development agreement is that the council is totally handling the allocation of residential densities to M3. And they can change the master plan at any time. It's just this wording right out of the development agreement. And there's no reduction in maximum density, so if they approve something that's less, that they can come back in and increase it. So the key thing is what we approve with this, or what the council approves with this, it lasts forever. It's not just a date and time, and we'll see how it goes. So the city council at this point then totally advocates the rights to change the density of this and looking at R12 densities. And we don't think that R12 densities fit in rural settings. R12 would bring 10 to 15,000 people, cars, and water use in our area. It's 5 miles from CUNA. It's not in the city. It's the definition of urban sprawl. The development agreement doesn't preclude them changing anything from senior housing to fourplexes. They can do what they want. As soon as you sign this thing, it's the doors open for M3 to do what they need to. And along the way, the city absorbed the cost to do this water development. There's two municipal wells that are planned for this, and we stand that we would really like to work with the city, work with the developer, work with everybody to see if we can't come up with a reasonable solution to addressing our well issues. So with that, I'll give it up to the next person, unless you have any questions.
Okay. Questions for Brian?
Thank you.
Thank you. Elise Daniel?
Mr. Mayor and Council, Elise Daniel, 10781 South Cloverdale Road in CUNA. I live right across the street from Falcon Crest and pick up golf balls year-round, all the time, out of my field. We residents obviously have a lot of concerns. I know you've heard some of them already, and I'm a little bit repetitive here, but we really are urging you to limit this development. I believe it's a misnomer when they're saying 2.25 units per acre, because the current development plan includes 807 acres of R6 and 189 acres of R12 densities. That could mean up to 7,000 homes if they made use of all that's in the development plan. Our development, the Cloverdale Ridge Estates, has a density of one home for every 7 acres. So pretty dramatic difference. We're urging you to stop urban sprawl and reconsider the plan, do the necessary testing for water and for the roads to support the plan. We understand it is going to be developed. We just want it to be developed in a way that works for everybody in the area. We're not saying we want to choose our neighbors or who lives there, but we are going to be sharing limited resources out there. Water and traffic are two of the biggest concerns we have. From everything I've read, there's no substantive plan to expand Cloverdale Road, and the amount of cars that are going to be going up and down Cloverdale Road is unsustainable with this development. And the development is currently, or looks like it's going to be just a town of its own. So I don't know what it's bringing to the town of CUNA itself. They're clearly creating their own little town out in the middle of an urban area. Adjacent homes, farms, and families have supported CUNA for decades. We work in CUNA. We support the schools. We support the businesses. We are really the roots of this town. But we don't have a vote for city council. We can't vote you in or out, and yet your vote affects our lives. I feel like it's really unacceptable to have someone come from Arizona, out-of-town people that have a lot more influence on you than we do when we're the ones here living in this community and supporting the community. So we are the friends. We are the neighbors. We want to work with people. We just don't want to see you hand the keys to the kingdom to some people from Arizona. So please consider the real costs to the city of CUNA as you decide whether you're going to pass this and support the current development agreement. We do urge you to conduct a full well test and evaluate all the impacts before you approve the annexation of the town. We just want you to have a really full picture before you make a decision. Thank you.
Okay. Richard Vick. Oh, you wanted not to testify. Bruce Collier, did you want to?
I spoke last week and I was opposed and I still am.
Okay.
So I was told I couldn't testify again. So.
Not testify.
You have my
testimony. So. I can't read the name. It's 5783.
Mike? Yeah, Mike.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
No, that was a question.
Oh.
City Council members, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for hearing us. I'm Mike Apostolou, 5783 East Barrel Horse Lane, Cunito. And the same concerns that I brought up 2 weeks ago are still on the table. I like what the last lady, her passion, I have the same concerns of the influence from out of town people and money have for the local residents. We'll reiterate, we understand the development is going to happen whether we want it to or not. It was telling how animated you get when the development's closer to your own homes, as you are when it's not. You don't have very many questions when it's not near yours, but we spent about an hour and it seemed to be impacting others. I would like that same consideration. I know it's hard because it's not impacting you, but this is being portrayed, or, and I'm not saying it's not going to be, but if they're going to be a retirement community with 2.5 homes per acre, why do you need R6 or R12? If that's good, why do you need a safety valve in case it doesn't work out and then you can build more? Those are questions I have. I'd like the developer to address that as rebuttal. I would also like to say that if approving this, that you would not approve those zoning classifications. For perspective, even a 2.5 home per acre restriction is, in my piece of land, 14 and a half acres, I could build over 30 homes on there, have one house on it. And so I don't know if that rings true with everybody in here, but it certainly does to us because we are in the direct line of sight of this. So thank you for your time. Thank you for consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Tyler Dibble, did you want to testify?
Good evening. My name is Tyler Dibble, 1425 Cow Horse Drive. Just listening to the council tonight, it seems that the council pushes back, as with the city, with the R6. As it was heard, R8 was trying to be pushed on the other development, and yet we have R12 that's trying to be pushed on this one. Same thing as a lot of people, is R6 and R12 seem to be really dense. When the developer says it's 3.2 homes per acre, but that includes all 36 holes of that golf course and the driving range. They include all that open space in their development agreement. So I'd really be considered if how dense it is without the golf course and driving range included in that. As with the other subdivision up tonight, City Council demanded a traffic study. I really stress it. A good one is requested for this development, as it's putting a lot of cars on Cloverdale and Keene Road. Also, just to touch on the water again, we as Cloverdale Ridge Water Corporation would love to urge to the council to create a bond or a trust fund as a provision of the development agreement, so any impact of the wells can be studied and mitigation if surrounding wells are impacted. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we will ask that they address the R6 and the R12. So just to cut back on redundancies there. Rex Hyatt, did you want to testify?
Yeah, just a couple of things.
Okay.
Mayor, Council, thank you. Rex Hyatt, 10699 South Cloverdale Road, right across from the golf course. Just reiterating, this is out of the Statesman talking about 18,000 vehicle trips per day down Cloverdale. At least half of that, they said, will be down Cloverdale. That's a lot without any adjustment to that road beforehand. I know it's not going to hit all at once, but that's a big deal, at least to those of us that live there. And it, the other thing that they stated, with two people per household, that this development alone will boost the 19,700 population of this city by 20%. So again, I mean, that's a huge burden on those of us that live out there. Anyway, I just hope that you guys will take and consider these impacts on us, at least for those of us that live out there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Quincy Holton.
Mayor, members of council, my name is Quincy Holton, 6000 East Deer Flat, CUNA. I don't have any credentials, just a kid raised, born and raised in Idaho, grew up on a farm, continuing to farm life with my family on a small farm. I'm just going to comment on what I've observed today, is that you guys had just a lot of concerns and deliberation on the previous issue. With a 200 single lots being built here in CUNA. And I just ask that you would make it proportional amount of consideration for a 2,000 home development or more going in our area. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Meg Lawson.
Hi, I'm Meg Lawson, 1357 Cal Horse in CUNA. I have some concerns with the Falcon Crest development, mostly related to the schools. I was a school nurse for 13 years in CUNA, and saw the problems that we had with the incredible number of students in each school, more than each school was designed for. And with this development, they're saying thousands more homes, which means we all know more than two people per home. That's going to be a huge number of students. I haven't read in the development agreement that they have addressed the impact on the school system. Previously, you were talking about the problem of school buses, 10 buses costing about $10 million. We're going to need at least 10 buses out there for that many new students. I think it's incredible that a development of this magnitude isn't addressing the schools, and to say we'll address it in the future isn't realistic. It happens now. The students are there. When the homes are built and the students come, it puts a burden on every teacher, every nurse, every counselor, every employee in the district. I think that's a really, really important thing to take into consideration. Personally, I think there's a problem with the water issue. When the developer says they'll drill wells after the approval, I think that wells need to be drilled before this plat is given a huge approval, because what if they can't find the right amount of water? And truly, what if it does impact our wells? Who's going to pay for that? Us? We don't want this huge development. So what should we be as landowners responsible for that kind of development and interruption in our water supply? The last thing I'd like to say is about the traffic, and I think that the amount of traffic that's coming or will be on Cloverdale Road is going to be unbelievable. You've just heard someone say 18,000 trips. You guys were really concerned about 2,000 trips a day when you were talking about this other subdivision. I would think that this would be a really big concern for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dean McQuiley? No? Okay.
Can I ask a question real quick?
And that was the last one. So did I get everybody on there that wanted to testify? Okay. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask, I'm sorry if I already forgot the name, but whomever said that the Statesman said 18,000 vehicle trips per day, I have the article, and I definitely see where it mentions, like, the potential 20% population boost, but I don't anywhere see a mention of 18,000 road trips or road trips generally. Do you know where in that article? I think it's, is it the one in our packet, or?
No, I didn't give you guys a copy of it. This is the article that I printed off. And that was, I don't know what page it is.
Okay. Does that need to go into?
So, yeah.
It's not the one that we have.
It's going to have to go into the record.
Okay. Sorry.
Can you give it to the clerk? Don't forget that.
Thank you.
All right, so now we have some rebuttal time.
Troy wants to say something.
What's that?
Troy wants to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Troy, go ahead. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just again for the record, Troy Buchanan. Just to address a few things that have been brought up to reconfirm that staff has been through the development agreement with the developer multiple times, and with the developer's attorney and our attorney. The allocations of density are not loosey-goosey. They are well-defined. There's a definition section, 1.30 and 1.31. They talk about and define what reallocation of densities mean. The densities are never going to exceed any kind of R6 or R12, whatever the underlying zoning is. Even with a planned unit development, they don't have that ability. That's not what they're proposing, and they wouldn't be able to do that anyway. And there's some safeguards that are in place. There's a density maximum, which I already mentioned is in 1.30. And in 4.42, it talks about no change or no change to the existing uses or any kind of changes to the development plan as it's proposed, which is included in the packet, which was submitted. In addition to that, the first safeguard we have is they have to file a plan unit development application that defines everything, which they've already done. Then they have to file a subdivision application for each of their plats, where staff will review, does this exceed the R6 or the R12? So that's the first safeguard. And then they would also have to go through design review for those subdivisions. So the densities will never increase over what they're requesting unless they file a separate application and they do this all over again and they ask for an increase in that. In that density, but they would have to go through this process in order to change that.
So are you saying then that the overall project, when they were saying it's 2.2 or whatever that was, that won't change? I mean, are they stuck with the 2,000 lot?
They have submitted an application for 2,322 homes. That number will not be able to be increased unless they go through the public hearing process. That is the maximum they will be allowed, period.
Because I think that the concern was that where there is R6 and there is R12, that they could expand that and do that throughout the whole project. And
no, they will not.
So that, I just wanted to clarify that.
That's a very, very good point, very astute question. They have actually define the areas where they want the R12 and the R6 throughout the development. They've already showed us that, fulfilling one of the development agreement requirements. So in order for them to change that and to expand on an R12 or an R6, they would have to go through this process all over again. So what they ask for, that's what they're stuck with.
So I guess now I'm a little confused still. Yes, they're stuck on the 2322 lots. But what you're also saying is they're stuck at the R6 or R12. Well, the concern I think they're saying is the R12 says they can build 12 homes per acre. Yeah, sure, they don't want to expand beyond that, but their concern is expanding beyond the 2.2 homes per acre that he has said is in it. I believe that's their concern, and it's a question that I was going to bring up as well. Because, yeah, sure, I get that they can't expand on the R6 and R12 zone designation, but that allows for still many more homes in that designation than the 2.2 that they've committed to. So what you're saying is they can go above the 2.2 homes per acre. They just have to stick within the R6 and the total amount of 2,322.
They're not limited to a 2.25 units per acre. That's just an overall project. That's what the 2322 comes out to with their development application acreage. It's just an average. But in the R12 zones, they would be able to develop up to 12 units per acre, but they still cannot exceed the 2322. They cannot exceed the R12. They can't build 12.1, 12.2, 12. That's the maximum that they can develop. Same with the R6. Unless they come back and they go through the public hearing process all over again. And it is defined many times throughout the development agreement that that's how it is. They have decided R6 is what they want to do in this area, and they've given us a legal description, a meets and bounds, signed by a licensed land surveyor that defines the R6 areas and the R12 areas. That's what they're...
Okay, we can't do this.
So the underlying zoning will always be R6 or R12 for those areas. So if they come in with a development plan that exceeds 12 units per acre, staff will deny them.
But the gist of the whole thing is they cannot go beyond the 2,200,
the stated request of 23
residential units.
Correct.
So there's no way they're going to build 100 acres of R12. The development agreement won't allow that.
If you have 800 acres of R6, it doesn't mean you're having 800 acres of R6, because there's things like roads, open space, trails, the golf course, ACHD retention ponds, things like that. All of that is built into that large 860 acres. All of that is built into the R12. It doesn't mean that you're getting that many homes on that much acreage, because you still have to meet the requirements of ACHD and the city, which we require sidewalks and streets and all of the necessary things to make a subdivision work and function. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on is when it comes to roads 5.1 and 5.1.1.1, they have to get a master plan roadmap actually approved, and we have a number of items and subsections in the private roads and the public streets section, which is in 5.1. So they're going to have a lot of requirements placed on them in order to design to the necessary standards by the city and also by ACHD. And that is in the development agreement. I mean, there's 11 or 12 subsections. And then also, staff would just like to point out that the CUNA School District was also given a request for comment. They did not provide any for this subdivision either. However, CUNA School District is aware of this project and they are making adjustments to their plan as well. They have their own plan, but they were given the opportunity to comment on this project. With that, I'd stand for any questions you might have.
Okay. Questions for Troy?
Not right now.
All right. Rebuttal.
Mark Tate, again for the record, 1087 West River Street. I'll start with the comments on water and just reiterate, I don't have the total number of wells in the city of Cuna, maybe seven or so, but an additional well in this location would be no different than all of the other wells in the city of Cuna that Cuna has developed over the years. There's private wells throughout the entire city. There's private wells throughout the valley and public wells. You know, IDWR and DEQ have processes to deal with this across the valley. It's not a unique thing to the city of Cuna, and I do understand that, you know, as neighbors, it is very personal. And I understand that. I think Ed was very clear and knowledgeable at the last hearing, and I won't go through that again, but, you know, the impact probability was very, very low, and the city, as he said, has the best monitoring and testing available, and so, you know, that's really the key. With regard to this density, I appreciate Troy clarifying that. In the development agreement, there's a term defined called maximum density. It's 1.3.1. And the maximum density is clearly defined as that 2,322 units across the entire project, which comes out to 2.25 units per acre. There is sections of the property that would be zoned R12. There's some commercial in the corner. And then everything else is zoned R6. The reason that we did that is, you know, as we go and develop along the golf course, you know, we have no density planned for those golf courses. So when you look at our master plan, there's actually a table up in the corner divided into villages with little boundaries on them. And each of those villages, which are also defined in the development agreement, have units of density allocated to them. So when the development agreement talks about reallocating of units, it's within those villages that we will develop. So for instance, you know, the first villages includes our preliminary plat. If we were under that number, we could move some of those units to another village. We can never go over 2,322 units for the entire project, period. Can't do it. So while we might have some high density stuff at R12, which is right around our village areas where we're going to have a mix of uses, entertainment, all of those sorts of things, we want that R12 designation for the product type, for attached product. We're looking at, you know, retirees. Not everybody wants yards at all. And so their amenities will be part of the community. That's what that zone allows us to do. We're not going to build 12 units per acre across that entire thing. When you look at the density allocated to those villages in our master plan, you know, it's much lower. So I do understand their concern. It's sort of a difficult concept to explain and maybe a little bit different than you're used to. Certainly when somebody comes in with a preliminary plat for an entire thing, it's a lot easier to wrap your head around. You know, we're trying to master plan it. We're trying to build in flexibility to make the community nice, to adapt to changing market conditions. But it does give the neighbors and the council certainty, 2322. That is the limit, 2.25 units per acre over the entire thing. You know, if we're going to be developing at 12 units per acre in one part of the project, that means we're going to have to be way, way, way lower or at zero on big portions of the project in other areas. So that's how that allocation concept works. You know, it is very, very cut and dry that, you know, there can't be 6,000 houses out there. There simply can't. You know, if we try to come in and increase the density, we would be back here going through the same project. It would be a development agreement modification. It would be a rezone. It would be a PUD modification, that sort of thing. We would have to follow the public process again. You know, there were some concerns about, you know, will we be part of CUNA? Are we part of CUNA? Had my Idaho credentials questioned a little bit, which those who know me know that I'm a native Idahoan, sixth generation, and quite proud of it. Our office is located here. So I don't feel like I need to defend that, but as far as the project goes, we will be a big part of CUNA. You know, the shopping, the dining, all of that makes the most sense to be part of CUNA. CUNA Road is the main corridor to get to downtown. And we'll have mixed uses inside the project, including a restaurant, shopping, which is actually going to take trips off the roads. Instead of driving out, part of the project, we'll build the restaurant as part of the golf course. So sounds like my time is up, but I'd stand for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mark?
Not at this time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I do think that we've addressed the last meeting that the reason we don't want the developers drilling the wells is the city of CUNA needs to own those. We have really tight restrictions on what we do with our water systems. We are probably well ahead of any other city, at least in this area, as far as what we do with wells and our water because of our concerns with that and are wanting to have quality water. So I think we kind of covered most everything unless there's something I missed on my
note. I have a question for Bob.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bob, do you happen to know if the city has ever, I believe there was testimony suggesting that the city had entered into some sort of a water trust fund at some point in the past with some entity in the past. Do you happen to know anything about that, and could you share?
Mayor and Council, I do not have any information on that. However, as the discussion's been going on, Paul and I have been chatting a little bit, and he believes that IDWR has safeguards in place for that.
And just for the record, can you tell us what IDWR stands for?
Idaho Department of Water Resources.
Thank you.
And so I think what they're referring to is we used to have a well mitigation fund, and then the need for that went away when IDWR put into place their system for that. So we have since phased out our well mitigation fund and don't currently have that anymore. So,
did you have something you wanted to say, Paul?
No, ma'am.
Oh, okay. You looked like it.
And also, I don't believe that we ever used a penny out of that account that I know of. Never saw any come across in the 7 years I've been here. So. Actually, I think it was last year that we did away with that, so actually it would have been 6 years that I knew of. Okay. Greg?
It's a lot of development. I see the neighbors' concern. You know, in relation to the last one, if they built out at 5.2, that'd be 5,000 homes, minus, of course, parks, trails, like Troy discussed. So at 2.25, that's a lot better in my eyes. I hope it was clear to the crowd what Troy was stating about. It's not, there's sections that are a certain zoning, and it's only for a small section. It's not, like stated, 800 acres worth or whatever. So I hope that was more clear to people. I get their concern on the water issue worse, but specifically some of them have already had to re-drill wells in the recent years, and the cost of that is tremendous. So I guess my biggest concern is the water, you know, the well issue, We put them there. We pipe water from our current system out. I guess I don't know the best solution at this point.
Not to put you guys on the spot, but do you have any additional knowledge or information you can share about the program or resources that IDWR would have that kind of replaces the need for some sort of a well mitigation fund, if that question makes sense?
I think we would probably have to research that a little bit to be able to answer that accurately.
Warren. Just to add on to this, just hearing the discussions over the last couple of times, that, you know, it sounds like the main obvious one that everyone's talked about was water. You do find comfort in IDWR. Without that added detail, obviously there's not 100% full confidence, but in the same respect, it's there to protect. It's there to protect things moving forward if this development were to go through. There was brief discussion again on the traffic, but I think last time we squared away that ACHD has that in their five-year plan, if I remember correctly, working up and down Cloverdale to ensure that traffic is mitigated, taken care of. And then it goes to just the overall growth and development. You know, it's no secret sitting up here, it's always hard to look at this growth and the change that it's bringing to CUNA and the strain it puts on our schools and the strain it puts on our roads and things like that, but each development is unique in that you have to look at the bigger picture, and things are squared away with having the roads taken care of and the waters protected moving forward. So I don't have any added questions in that respect, but...
And so that brought to my mind one other thing that we talked about the last time was the, because we are the ones that put in the wells, we do test wells, and if those test wells don't pan out, the IDWR won't allow us to drill a well out there, so then we have to hook into a different source. So we're pretty well assured when we do our test wells as to what water is out there. Bob, go ahead.
Mayor and Council, I did just look at their website and find something that might help with this a little bit. It's the priority date. If I can, I'll go ahead and read this, what this says. It says the priority date is the date when the water right was established and determines who gets the water when there is a shortage. If there is not enough water available to satisfy all the water rights, then the oldest or senior water rights are satisfied first, and so on, in order, until there is no water left. When there is not enough water to satisfy all the water rights, new or junior water rights holders do not get the water. So I think that's where, in the permitting process, is why we kind of developed the plan B, would be if the permit doesn't get approved because of the priority dates, that's kind of where plan B comes in. So if that helps with anything.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
With your permission, if Bob could cite what he was reading from so on the record we can identify where that came from.
Yes, Mayor and Council, I'm reading that from Idaho Department of Water Resources website, subsection titled Priority Dates.
Okay. Did we have any other questions for anyone else, or did we want to continue on with the hearing? Yes.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, if you have any questions about how the development agreement is put together and why it's in the order that it is or whatever, I would stand for any questions you might have about that.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just
Did
reading through.
Council, have any other questions for anyone?
I don't think so. Do folks feel prepared to make a decision or no?
Yeah, I think.
Just wanted to remind you that you had not closed the evidence presentation.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So you guys are ready for that?
Sure.
I move we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close consideration or close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries.
So I guess just in speaking to some of the concerns that were brought up this evening, I know that it was mentioned some sort of consideration for the schools and any additional impact that, that this subdivision would have on, or I guess this development agreement and master plan community would have on the schools. Under Idaho code, we can't charge impact fees for schools. Schools can't charge impact fees, and certainly we can't charge them for schools because it's separate taxing entities. It's something that I know a lot of people find frustrating. I find frustrating, but really the only remedy for that at this point would be to talk to your legislators and see if they're interested in changing Idaho code on that point. I think Mayor Steer mentioned this, but the reason that we can't, you know, the reason we can't do test wells, and as I guess to provide a little extra clarity there, it is my understanding that that is also because the city is the one that has to pull the permits for doing any drilling and that sort of thing, and so with the city being the permit holder, the city is the one that needs to do the drilling, but we can't pull permits until the land is annexed into the city, if that makes sense. And I think Bob testified last time about the very exacting specifications for the wells and that sort of thing, so we also wouldn't want somebody else to do them for that reason. Is that, am I recalling your testimony correctly?
Yes, if we were to pull the permit and allow them to drill the wells on our behalf, we become liable for their work that we would not be overseeing because it's not in the city limits. So it just creates a lot of potential problems for us to deal with. Basically, they would be drilling wells with our permit instead of us drilling the wells and managing the project.
And can you refresh my memory? The I'm getting testimony, aren't I? Sorry. I'll just say my recollection from last time was also that we were doing, it was either a 24 or a 48-hour test run, continuous pumping, and that's how we were going to establish whether there was sufficient water. And at that point, if there's not, we abandon the well plan and move forward with just extending water lines.
Creating a cone of depression.
Well, yes, sort of. let's see. I think I recall reading in one of the letters that was submitted, you know, why don't we just... We're already running sewer out there. Why don't we just run potable water at the same time? If it were that easy. Potable water and sewer lines can't be in the same hole, so you'd have to have separate trenches dug for that, and so the cost would still be double what it would be. You wouldn't think it would, but, yeah, you can't put them both in the same trench or in the same hole. Let's see. I guess just one other note that I think is in some way important to be aware of is it's not as if this whole proposal is just coming forward on the heels of, you know, oh, there's this big housing boom in the valley and so many people want to move here, and so, like, let's come up with this big plan. But as it noted in the Statesman article that's in our packet, this development was, or a development, was conceived to adjoin the golf course since before the course opened 17 years ago. So it has been part of kind of a greater long-term plan and isn't necessarily just to capitalize on some of the boom that we're experiencing. Do you guys have any thoughts that you want to make sure we talk about?
Well, you already touched on the schools. I would hope, I don't know how many of the people in attendance have kids in school still or whatnot, but I would hope that you go to school board meetings and address some of the concerns with them you've addressed with us. I know it's tough, meeting schedules and dates for meetings and stuff if you do have kids and they're in sports or whatever else, but it really does help when people show up and show that they care about their area they live in or their subdivision or whatever. So thank you for coming, for all the testimony that all of you have gave, and you know, your input doesn't go unheard. It's tough to make these decisions based on a personal feeling or whatever when we have guidelines we have to follow, but it is nice to see such an audience. I mean, we usually get five people for a meeting, and one of them's always the paper girl. So, you know, it's really nice to see. It's sometimes hard because you're all staring, glaring, or otherwise, but I feel, you know, your pain in this situation. I'm not to the magnitude. I had a development come through that's right out my backyard. Of course, I didn't want to see it because now that's what I see out my back window, but again, it met the provisions, so I was part of the approving council on that. So, in closing, thanks for coming and thanks for your input. It doesn't make it any easier of a decision, but it's nice to see participation.
Yeah, I can't follow up what Greg just said. That was pretty spot on, I guess, with how we all feel about things like this. Hopefully you had some of your concerns answered through the various testimonies over the last few weeks and everything that was said. And as Greg said, this does not go unheard by any means, and it never does, even though I feel like some people do get that way and feel that way about things. But, you know, I'll just finish it up by saying thank you as well for showing up and the last few meetings and discussing this with us.
Very good. Well, the question is rightfully before council.
Let's see. Sorry. My packet's not cooperating. Hang on.
I don't see it either.
I guess one other thing that I did want to make sure was clear on the record. As I understood, I completely am blanking on the gentleman's name, but our water expert from last time, based on the way that we drill our wells, rather, they are like a solid column, and so it extracts water from the very bottom, but it wouldn't be pulling in side water. Which should impact the cone of depression was the term that we learned last time. But it sounded like there was a pretty low chance that existing wells would be impacted based on the way that we drill our wells and that they don't suck from the side water, or you know, which I understand is not the way that individual landowners' wells are drilled. They're usually permeable sites. So I found that testimony really helpful, and I hope that it allayed some concerns in that regard.
Well, I think the other thing too notable is the distance from where these wells will be to the nearest well beyond that. I don't remember what that was, 1,000 feet or maybe more than that, wasn't it? I don't even know for sure.
Sorry, I'm still trying to find the right spot in my packet. It's forever long. On an unrelated note, for future packets, maybe we could get sub-bookmarks as I'm trying to go through 400 pages to
just
find the page that I wanted.
The last 40 acres plot was 187 pages. This one is 457, so it's hard to find what you're looking for sometimes.
Let's see. Okay. Did you find your page? It appears to me that the proposed development and annexation in the whole packet does comply with CUNA's comprehensive plan. It includes the variety of housing densities and that sort of thing that we have expressed we would like to see. It also touches on some of our economic development goals. With respect to getting some more commercial in there, and especially mixed in with housing for with various types of housing. I do appreciate that overall the density of this project is lower and includes kind of a variety of interesting options for people in terms of larger homes or smaller homes and not having to have yards and having yards and that sort of thing. This does seem like an interesting development also, just with the resort-style community, which I think would be a rather unique addition to the area. It appears to be consistent with CUNA City Code. I note that the Planning and Zoning Commission did also recommend approval. All of the agencies we contacted regarding the application did not raise any concerns. And so with that in mind, I would move we direct staff to prepare findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order of decision for approval by council at the next council meeting consent agenda to approve 1803AN, 1801 CPM, 1804 ZC, 1802 PUD, 1804 S, and the development agreement for Falcon Crest subdivision.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to have staff create findings of facts and conclusions of law in the decision. For the next hearing, or for the next meeting, and consideration to approve the 18-03-AN 18-1-CPM, 18-04-ZC, 18-02-PUD, 18-04-S, and the development agreement for Falcon Crest Subdivision. Is there any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion carries. And that is the last thing we have on the agenda for the night. Is there any announcements council has?
No.
You've had enough?
Remember, we're all supposed to send cards to Cardoza, so make them good. Think him
send cards.
You know he's got his iPad.
All right, meeting is adjourned.